From the LiveX studios in New York City, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Packer Transplants Live. I am Aaron Nagler, and joining me, as always, is my partner here at Cheesehead TV, Mr. Corey Banky. I'm coming to you live from the Cheesehead TV podcast studio in Midtown Manhattan. Corey joins us live across the street from Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And we are ready to talk some Packers. What do we have on tap today, Corey?
Today, we get to the bottom of what went wrong out in the swamps of New Jersey and look ahead to a tough matchup with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But right now, it's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. We got the good. We got
Tucker Kraft.
We got the bad. We got
Keyshawn Nixon.
We got the ugly. We got
your Green Bay Packers. Because anytime you go out on Monday Night Football and embarrass anybody and everybody involved and associated with the Green Bay Packers, you get put in the ugly. Because that was an ugly performance, Banky.
You ain't got no alibi. You ugly. You ugly.
What? Yeah, it was not great. Oh, it was not good, Corey. Not great. You remember how we sat here last week and we thought, you know, this Monday night game, this Giants game is going to tell us a lot about what this team truly is. And I don't think they are the team that we saw on Monday night, but you saw a version of this team that can beat anybody and lose to anyone. You know, I hope for our sake they're able to get healthy and go on a run here, but this is what Corey and I were kind of talking about last week regarding, it's a very young team and they're going to have their ups and downs and it's going to be frustrating at times. And boy, howdy, Monday was frustrating. I'm that frustrated watching a Packers game in a long time. And we went through the 4-game losing streak earlier this year. And I don't remember even those game being this frustrating. I mean, I think it's because
you don't have a very long memory, it seems like.
No.
I mean,
because the fourth game, we had just seen them play really impressive games.
I remember the fourth loss and just coming to the show being like, why are we doing this show anymore? Maybe I didn't say it out loud. But
no, but this is my point. During a 4-game losing streak, you're like, all right, it's kind of who they are. Maybe they'll play better down the stretch. Like you always say, Corey, you're not the totality in the first month or two of the season. You got to find out who you are throughout the total sum of the 17 game schedule, right?
Yeah.
But you're in the midst of a losing streak early in the year. You're like, all right, it's kind of who they are, right? But coming off of winning 4 of 5 and winning 3 in a row and doing it the way they did against some good competition, especially on Thanksgiving and then Sunday night against the Chiefs, you're thinking, okay, ascendancy here, and this might be who this team is, and they're kind of humming along, and they're getting better. You're seeing improvement. And then to lay that gigantic egg on Monday night, I'm not saying, like, it's not, like, part of what we're talking about as far as the identity of a team and needing to see everything play out. But, man, you thought they were headed in a certain direction. So the frustration I feel, man, I'm not going to talk for you, obviously, but for myself, the frustration is, man, I know I've seen the standard. That standard I thought was set, and then it all fell apart on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt LaFleur was drinking his own Kool-Aid the last 2 weeks, and I think he was thinking we were the team. We weren't. But, you know, hey, if you go back to London, this is the team that beat us in London. So change out the quarterback.
Yeah.
Away we go.
Yeah, away we go. So we're not gonna dwell on it early because we know how we start this show, Corey. We start it with the hotness. So let's get to it. Time for the hotness. And, you know, there were a few things, even in, you know, the despair of the ugliness of that loss, there were still a few things to choose from when it comes to the hotness. But I had to go with our guy AJ Dillon ripping off these yards after catch. Let's take a look at this. A pretty simple play in the sense that, okay, AJ comes out of the backfield. Jordan Love hits him pretty quickly. Make a guy miss. Make a stiff arm a dude. And then come up in here and like shoulder into it. And then some guy tries to take you out and you just absorb it and go, yeah, what's up? Ladies and gentlemen, that is the hotness. I love that.
That was good stuff.
AJ Dillon, man.
What's funny is I remember when that happened live, and somebody on the chat was like, "That needs to be the hotness," and we were like, "I think I said it," or I don't know. We were like, "Okay, well, there's going to be a lot more," and that ended up being the hotness.
And then there wasn't. I will say there were a couple throws by Jordan late in the game that were in contention, but that play is just outstanding. I love everything about it. All right, let's get to some Packers news, shall we? The upsetting news coming out of this game is the continued problems with injuries, including Dontavian Wicks dealing with an ankle injury. I know he had a quote after the game saying he thinks it's a high ankle issue. We'll see. You don't love to see any of that when it comes to a team that's already in dire straits when it comes to what they're dealing with. He would be a did not participate today in practice if they had practiced, which they didn't. So all the injury information is a guesstimation from the Packers. But not good. Not good at all, especially since Christian Watson as well would not have participated today. Your hope was to get him back. So far, not so good this early on this week.
I'm sure the other piece of news coming out of thing that's going to suck about this is we're going to get to see more of Touré. More Touré disappointment in store.
Now, here's the thing. Touré, don't forget, he has guys beat for touchdowns in two plays in that game. Now, there's the one on the right side that Love definitely hits late and takes him out of bounds. A better receiver, yes, probably gets his feet in, and that's a touchdown,
Dobbs
right?
Gets his feet in.
100%, although Dobbs didn't later on.
I know, but I know. Point, he almost did, though. But that hit, being, the one like, he doesn't get his feet in is harder, though, but okay.
He has one foot in, too. But my thing with Touré is, like, he's in position to make that play as a touchdown, right? If Love is able to hit him in the timing of the play, it's because things kind of broke down up front and Love's on the move. But if he can hit him in rhythm, that's probably a touchdown. So that's one. And then there's the other one prior to that, which – Touré beats the guy up the left sideline and he's got a good step on him and Jordan Love just underthrows it. You know, so if, you know, he can get in
position. But Touré could go to the ball.
Make some plays. I know. I'm not saying he can. I agree.
It's just Touré. Why I don't like, you know what? And I don't know why. I was trying to think about why I have so much like hate for Touré. I think it's because like these young guys have proven how good they are. Compared to him, and you know what I mean? It's like, I think in the past, you usually have a guy like Touré and a guy like Wicks on your team, because you have a good 1-2-3, you're focused on them, so like that guy's like whatever. But now, with now you look at like Wicks, Watson, Dobbs, Heath. I mean, Heath has already surpassed Touré. Yeah. You know, Reed is actually inhuman the way he's been playing, I feel like, this season for the Packers. Because, have we ever had a rookie wide receiver playing this good? I don't think so. And a lot of that's because we don't usually give rookies that much time to play. We don't have
the
a choice this season.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other piece of news coming out of that game is Jaden Reed was evaluated for a concussion at the end of the game after that hit he took on the 2-point conversion attempt. The good news is he is listed as a limited participant on today's injury report, which again is an estimation, but he's listed with an ankle. So, which is something he's been dealing with, and there's no mention of the concussion. So hopefully that means he's symptom free and or cleared and is not in concussion protocol. So that's a bit of good news, such as it is. It's just nice that he's probably not dealing with the concussion problem. Very nice to see. Here's a really hot one for you here, Corey. I know you're going to be very excited. The Packers have released cornerback Caillou Blue Kelly, who I know you have no idea who that is. But
I mean, I would know who he is if he showed up on the snap count. Didn't show up this week.
He doesn't. So, he's been inactive. He was a healthy scratch.
Bye-bye.
So But the thinking here is hopefully this means that Eric Stokes is close to returning. Somebody who was a full participant all last week and didn't dress for the game.
I've heard
would have been listed
before.
Is listed as a full participant in what would have been today's practice. So hopefully this means, you know, they've released the corner. They're going to bring Stokes up. That's the hope. And this is the week they have to do it, because this is after this week, his 21 days are up. And if they don't activate him, he goes back to IR for the remainder of the season.
But will they do it just for that reason, though? Will they do it just for that reason?
Possibly. I'm not privy to the injury information, so I can't tell you. But they could, yes. That's a potential outcome. Then practice squad news, because I know you're a big fan. Tyreek Pitts signed to the practice squad. Wide receiver that Corey is going to be a big fan of. I have zero doubt. Got to add to the bodies in the room at that position, obviously, with all these guys dealing with injuries. Don't expect him to see the field. Undoubtedly, if they have to, they'll call up either Bo Melton or Grant Dubose off the practice squad for a game before Pitts would ever see action. And then finally, it's not really Packers news, but it's exciting NFL news. With the NFL announcing today, they will be playing a game in Brazil next season. A game that I doubt will be. It could be Packers news. We'll see. We'll see. But they are also expanding the number of games in general, the international contest, from 4 to 8. So
wow.
Plenty more opportunities for the Packers to be headed overseas in the coming years.
You know, a stat that I saw that was really crazy is some 62 quarterbacks have been injured this season or something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been nuts this year.
Holy shnikes. And you got to imagine international play plays into that. I don't know. I don't have the data to support it, but you got to imagine those extra flights are wearing on these quarterbacks.
I don't know. I think it's much more about the poor offensive line play than anything.
I mean, Lord, the snap counts from our offensive line. Can we one day have 5 guys play 100% of the snaps like we used to? I remember those days. I remember those days when you would see 5 offensive linemen play 100% of the time. Oh, man.
Yeah. Just don't think it's going
to
happen, man.
Don't we have to play international every 3 years? Isn't that the new rule? Every team has to play
every
3 years?
Every 4 years. Nope, every 4 years.
Okay.
That's correct.
So that would be our 3rd year, or maybe that counts as our.
But you're not limited
to
just one time. You are required to do it once every 4 years. Exactly. But you could do more.
The Packers in South America feels like a thing. Like,
oh, Brazil.
I feel like the Packers
Brazil group is insane, man.
Yeah, well, I feel like the Packers have to be like one of the most popular teams. Yeah, I feel like we're one of the most popular teams in South America.
Zero question. Yes, sir. 100%. Well, remember when we were in London, how many people from South America did we talk to at that meetup at the Dog and Duck?
Oh, yeah, we got a Peru flag, right? I have a Peru flag.
Peru? Like, we had so many people from South America come say hi to us at that game. Like, yeah, there's a very strong contingent of Packers fans down there throughout South America. So the fact that they're going to play a regular season game in Brazil is freaking awesome. I'm with you, man. I could be the Packers, and I would absolutely love that. Let's talk about the offense, shall we? Since we got a football game to talk about, apparently.
Got it.
Jordan Love did not have a good game. He had a bad game, actually. He absolutely made some plays when they absolutely needed him to down the stretch, though. And that's I say that's a good sign, because we've all seen, you know, guys who come out early and probably are just not their night, like just a little off consistency-wise, accuracy-wise, and, you know, they never really put it together. I was impressed with how Jordan didn't get down on himself, kept firing away, and like I said, made plays at the end of that game to put them in a position to win. But I also don't want to deny that, yeah, there were some rough throws early on, especially some really bad misses.
I just wish that, like, we had a 4.3 7 yard average in that game. And
right.
83 yards. 83 yards is not acceptable. I just want, like, can Matt LaFleur, like, somebody give him a little scorecard? And until we dip under 4 yards, like, just stop, okay? Just stop. Stop thinking that these three mother... that this offensive line can protect the quarterback in any way, shape, or form. Stop thinking this. It's like you go into Kansas City and you're like, okay, they're not going to be able to do it. You go in, the games we've won, we don't think that way. And then all of a sudden we think, oh, yeah, let's just throw the ball. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. We can't pass block. Forgot about that.
They've been okay. They had a rough go of it on Monday.
Two sacks is not. He had 9 pressures and 2 sacks. That's unacceptable.
Martindale likes to dial up the blitz. That's the thing, and the blitz was successful. They just caught the Packers a couple times.
I don't like it.
And look, sometimes you got to tip your cap. You know, the other team gets paid too. I hear you, and I'm with you though. I wish they would have done a little bit more kind of between the tackles work with A.J. Dillon in lieu of all the stuff they were trying to do on the perimeter. And that's not
I don't think
there's a place for it, but just run the ball the way you were against Kansas City and stay ahead of the sticks.
I've come around on once in a while doing read on the edge.
It helps because it works sometimes.
And
it helps that – I was just going to say it helps that A.J.'s been, like, efficient and productive, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when he was falling down at the line of scrimmage week 1, week 2, then, yeah, I'm not a fan, but –
But that's my point about the 4 yards. It's like he just needs a thing where it's like, hey, are we still doing 4 yards a carry? Okay, we're still running. You know what I mean? Like, just there's no,
right.
Like, hey, are we doing good with this? Uh-huh. Cool. I'm not like you where it's like, and everybody else, like, we need to run the ball. Yes, we need to run the ball. But it's like against this team especially, we were running the ball effectively. And, like, to your point, it's like we get behind and then it's like, oh, let's do the same stupid fucking play to Reed again on the perimeter. And they know it's coming because they got away with it one time. It's like, bro, they're not going to do it again. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's not like they're the Packers' defensive line where, you know, hey, no, if we break contain, we'll never get to the quarterback. I know I skipped ahead, but.
You did. But it's true. I mean, that's the frustrating part, right? And look, I understand the whole read on the edge thing because it was successful early. They got in the end zone because of it, right? And they ripped off, like, a 20-yarder because of it in the third quarter. Like, they were successful with that play. But it's very clear that the Giants at some point made the adjustment necessary and were keying on it and knew, okay, if we see him coming, we're going to adjust and we're going to fly. And that's what the Packers defense never did with DeVito and those read options, like ever. But we'll get there. The offense definitely missed Watson and Jones. And I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, the team is obviously better with them on the field. That's a no-brainer. But it's like Aaron Jones had not really been missed over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks the way he was on Monday night. And I think A.J. played a good game, but they needed Aaron on some of these plays, these zone stretch plays where there were cutbacks available and A.J. is just kind of barreling into the line. And that's the kind of back he is. Like, basically, all hands catch – make sure the ball's breaking the plane, touchdown. Oh, and by the way, while you're headed out of bounds, take out the ref. I love Malik Heath. I love his story. I love what he brings to this team, both emotionally and physically. Big Malik Heath fan. Happy for him. Great to see him get, like I said, instant redemption. Big play. Let's be honest, should have been the game winner. Or maybe not. Nicole, you there?
We want to play the video.
Can we take the Mina Kimes thing?
I am so sick of watching this Packers defense do the same. It's been years. I just don't. And it's not just been Joe Barry. It preceded Joe Barry. But oh my God, the two things, I mean, I could single out a number of things that drive me crazy watching this defense that have been driving me crazy forever. I understand being taken back a little bit by the first time Tommy DeVito runs zone read. How are you still being fooled by that or not accounting for it deep into the football game? It was like It was like when teams used to play Daniel Jones, same quarterback. Like, what are you doing? You know he's going to keep it on some of these. It was mind-blowing. And then that final drive, knowing, like, just the situational football, you know that all they have to do is get into field goal territory, still giving them these cushions. It's Tommy DeVito. What are you doing? And, like, the Robinson throw was a good throw, and, like, that's fine. You made him beat you. Make him beat you. But, like, oh, my God, leading up to that, Dominique, like, I don't understand why the Packers, yeah. Like, this is their identity, which is crazy.
I almost feel silly talking about this game in isolation because this is them every year for the past 5 years. Is I look at their roster, I'm like, ooh, woo. And then I go and look at how they perform, and I'm like, And it's like, this was week to week. The last few weeks, they've been getting pressure, and it's been making the whole defense look better. They haven't had Alexander out there, which hurts them, but also, like, the defense has been good. And they weren't terrible in this game, but I guess they were pretty bad considering the opponents. Like, when you are getting ready for this game, who are you supposed to be concerned about? Like, it's not like they have a dominant O-line. They made.
I was going to say, you should be sacking Tommy DeVito. I think his numbers when he had, like, over 2.5 seconds were extremely good yesterday. I mean, it's just.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. They're not a team that is good enough to be having letdown games. I just don't know. I can't explain it. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. It's just something that happens with this team all the time.
All the time. Yeah, we're sorry, guys. I know we're having issues with the feed. They're working on it on the back end. But yeah, that's, I mean, the thing that Mina says initially is like, you totally identify with as a Packers fan. And then I think Dominique absolutely nails it when he says it preceded Joe Barry. Like, it's been them for a long time. You know, this is not new. And it goes back to what I was talking about before. Matt LaFleur has stated what style of defense he wants to see. But at some point, okay, Matt, why aren't you making changes? You get what you emphasize. That is the old coaching adage where, okay, are you emphasizing these things with your guys, with your staff? Because I never see it. I never see a change. And now, to Dominique's point, sometimes, yeah, you see a game where the front four takes over and you're able to dominate up front. You get sacks because you've dialed up the right combinations of coverages on the back end. Maybe you make the quarterback think for an extra second and your guys get home. But if that's not working, it's lights out. It's over. It's done with. And it doesn't matter if it's a great quarterback, if it's a bad quarterback, a young quarterback, an old quarterback. They play the same style of defense nearly every single week. There's no adjustments. And speaking of adjustments, again, Mina's point there, which kind of we talked about in the first part when you're talking about the adjustments the Giants made to read around the edge. Where was Joe Barry's adjustment to the fact that, oh, DeVito can run? Oh, hey, guess what? He's keeping on some of these. They're running with the, you know, intention of taking advantage of our ends. Who is telling these guys, okay, stop crashing down, start staying home? There's none of that on the defensive side of the ball for the Green Bay Packers. And as frustrating as it can be with Joe Barry, it falls on Matt LaFleur. It's his team. Joe Barry is running the defense that he wants. It's 3 years running now and nothing has changed. And that's my ultimate frustration.
Yeah. I mean, I was told there would be sacks and there weren't any.
Well, it should have been if the offense does its job.
At the end of the day,
you know, get a lead on that team, you can.
I mean, we still should have. Like, just the undisciplinedness of the front was really sad. And yeah, the fact that it just kept happening, there was no improvement over time. It's like, it's one thing, you know, to have that happen in the first quarter. You're pinning your ears back and you're like, oh, but, you know, yet again, here we are making a not very good quarterback look like the best quarterback in the league. And, you know, we're really good at that. We're really good at that.
We
and
are
like,
excellent. Just it's one of the things we
the disrespect.
The yes,
we underestimate our opponent when it comes to a quarterback, and the our inability to contain subpar quarterbacks is it's an Achilles heel for sure. I mean, we all knew we wouldn't be able to run block, right? Or run or tackle
stop the run
have a play good run defense and tackle people. We always knew that. Like those are we're, I don't think we're ever going to be good at that. At least not this season or next season. But you know, the fact that we can rush and we just succumb and don't have discipline when it comes to rushing the quarterback in these kind of games is just, that's the part I think that gets the most old for me. Because, like, I knew they were going to drive down the field. We don't have a at the end of that game, everybody knew what was going to happen. You know? Either we're going to get an interception.
It's both frustrating and kind of soothing. Because, yeah, I know we're not going to get that stop.
Well, there's no way we're going to play press. We're not going to play press, and we're not going to play press. You can ask for it all the time. Like, it's one thing to ask for running the ball, right? We are going to run the ball. We have running backs, okay? But, you know, we're not ever really going to play press, and we're not ever – like, you can tell, because if there was ever a time to play full court, like, straight-up man-to-man press coverage, right, it was at the end of that game. And the fact that, because we had nothing at that point, you're 6-6, you have everything on the line, you have everything to lose. That's the time when you want to play aggressive and win the game. And what did we do?
Try and dictate. We did the opposite. Yeah, no. Yeah. What's funny though, it's like you look at that drive, the driving question, right? And it's frustrating, no doubt about it. But like the first couple plays, totally fine. Quick completions, quick tackles. They're limited, you know, they're not marching. The one that kills me is there's the play up the right sideline where Carrington Valentine, I think they're going to play cover three, but Valentine starts way off, right? And then starts backpedaling. And the receiver just goes about 5 yards, stops, turns around, catches the ball, gets a 9-yard gain. Now they're ahead of the sticks. It's second and like one or two. And on the next play, they play some man, but it's against a bunch. So you have to be off a little bit, right? And Nixon gets cooked. You know, so it's like I understand, like, Joe can only call plays, right? And guys got to execute. There's no doubt about it. But, man, just that two-play sequence just kills you. And the idea that Valentine is playing, like, out in the parking lot, like, is that not emphasized? Like, do you not say what is your situational, you know, coaching point where, okay, yes, the call is cover three, but the situation dictates, look, let's not – just allow them to take completely easy yardage here and get themselves an advantageous down and distance. That's where I'm like, I say it all the time. They're fine talent-wise. They're fine conceptually. I understand everything they're trying to do. It's just situationally, they are, I mean, I hate to be so harsh with it, but they are almost inept situationally. Like, it blows my mind. Whether it's this, whether it's lining up in, you know, nickel on the goal line and just letting teams walk into the end zone, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's the situational
stuff. Well, it's not just the defense, to be honest, because you got a running back who should go out of bounds who instead like runs inbounds. I mean, come on.
Yep. No. Yep. I hear you. Again, are they practicing these things? Is this emphasized? Only Matt and his staff can answer this, right? But you get what you emphasize. And the product on the field suggests it's not being emphasized. And these situational things are not being drilled the way they probably should be. I mean, I'm not trying to be unfair, but that's the evidence on hand. Again and again and again. I don't know. They're too undisciplined up front. Well, that's the other part that just killed me on Monday night. Like, we're talking about a complete breakdown when it comes to contain, rush lane, something you talk about all the time, Corey. We certainly saw Rashawn Gary, I think, was the worst culprit. But, you know, Enigbari didn't cover himself in glory either. There were a number of times where, you know, he tries to slip inside and just leaves the door wide open for the quarterback to rip off a 10-yard gain, you know. These are the things where you can't take anyone lightly. And it sure feels like they did. Like, that's, I hate to say it because they're paid professionals and every game is like the most important thing, but it just felt, especially up front, that there was just a little bit of taking the Giants for granted, which is really unfortunate. And finally, hey, let's end on a good note. Ended on a good note on the offensive side, going to end on a good note on defense. How about Eric Wilson, huh? Playmaker. He was in the game for one play and he made the stop on fourth down. I mean, McDuffie helped clean it up, but Yeah, he was literally on the field for one play on that fourth down attempt by the Giants, and he got to Barkley and got him on the ground. Well done, Eric Wilson. Playmaker. That's my shining light on the defensive side, Corey, the dude who played one play on Monday night. Let's take a quick preview of this Bucks-Packers game. Rashad White has sparked Tampa's ground game. This kid is running like a boss. You talk about Packers run defense, it's going to get tested on Sunday. This kid has been pretty damn impressive the last three games for the Buccaneers. He's going to come to Lambeau and undoubtedly be a focal point of their offense. Baker Mayfield, back to Lambeau. Seems like this guy comes to Lambeau every year now. Last in Lambeau as a member of the Los Angeles Rams, now coming as the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He is coming off a very poor passing performance in Atlanta, less than 50% completion percentage. Got to think he's going to be trying to lick his chops over that Joe Barry defense. And then finally, Luke Goedeke and Rashawn Gary, key matchup. Luke is a Wisconsin native, I'm told, which I think is interesting. But Rashawn, we need some Bane Gary. We need some Rashawn redemption for that poor performance against the Giants. Hopefully they can get into some obvious passing situations and Rashawn can get after Baker a little bit, because we need to see some more Bane Gary this week. And then finally, Corey, before we get to the blogosphere, the Deion Sanders quote of the week. I absolutely love this. I think you and I were both tagged in this on Twitter, or sorry, X. I did want to highlight it, though, because this is hilarious. So, because, you know, Deion was talking about recruiting, and they just landed this big offensive lineman, and he was like, you know, we're not done yet, blah, blah, blah. And some booster responded, next year is going to be fire. My wife is a Colorado alumni, hasn't been interested in football for 30 years. We watched every Colorado game and many Broncos games this year, all because of Coach Prime. To which Deion retweeted, please take her out to dinner. I got it. Let me know what it costs, and I'm sending it to you if it's not a violation. Restaurant of her choice. Hashtag Coach Prime. Come on, Deion. I love
buying fans dinner.
I love him. Buying a booster dinner. I love it. And the wife.
I mean,
because she's watching Colorado ball again.
The Packers have bought us dinner before. Is that a violation?
They have. They have. Not. I don't think it's a violation
for a blog.
Because I'm not on the beat. Yeah. I'm trying to work that out, though, because I do have credentials. So I don't know. Tricky wicket right there. Although that's not true, because when I was on the beat, they had a Packers PR / beat dinner at the
party.
Combine.
Well, and also they provide
party.
Food.
It was just a dinner.
They provide food at the press at the yes. press box. I've
at
seen
the,
it
at Lambeau.
So that's yep. not yep. so it can't. That's the same thing. I've so eaten. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Not a conflict. Not a conflict at all. Shouldn't be a violation. You love to see it. But you're right. I forgot about that. The Packers did buy us dinner at the Northland, I believe. Whatever that. What was that restaurant called? I don't even know what it's called.
The Walnut Room.
The Walnut Room. That's right. Very good. Good times. Good times. All right. Let's get to the blogosphere. Hit it. That's right. It's This Week in the Packer Blogosphere, the return of that venerable series. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, set your VCRs because it's 1985.
Set your VCRs.
But be ready tonight. ESPN Plus, ESPN stuff. The tonight is the debut, 9, I believe, Eastern, 8 Central, of the Reggie White 30 for 30 on ESPN properties, The Minister of Defense. I am incredibly excited for this. I know obviously they're going to look at his play on the field. That's a foregone conclusion. I'm fascinated to see what they talk about when it comes to some of the off the field stuff, both with his ministry and his faith, but also some of the more controversial stuff towards the end of his playing career. I think the old heads here will remember his speech in front of the Wisconsin Assembly, which was a bit controversial. I'm just fascinated to see how they handle all of that and how much maybe some younger generations are surprised by it. Because I don't think, you know, it doesn't get talked about a lot for obvious reasons. Why would you? But I think, yeah, some people maybe don't know everything about everything Reggie did, both on and off the field, are in for a treat. Because 30 for 30s are usually pretty dope. And don't get it twisted. Reggie was amazing. He's a legend. And he did some amazing shit for the Packers, both on and off the field. An absolute force for good. No question about it.
You know, speaking of, I found out some news last night that I'm going to break right here. I believe the NFL draft, and this is, you know, don't tell anybody, you guys, because the Neville Museum, I believe, is going to be bringing back their delay of game exhibit for the NFL draft that's going to be in Green Bay. And for those of you that don't know, it's one of the greatest museum exhibits I've ever seen in my whole entire life. It is featuring the experience of African-American players in the green and gold. And it's where I found out about players like Emlyn Tunnell, Bob Mann, and, you know, a lot of the 1960s and 70s and 80s and 90s, the Reggie Whites, and their experience living in Green Bay, working in Green Bay. And it's a really fascinating exhibit. I just found out last night that they're bringing it back for the draft. I'm really, really excited about it. And, like, if you are going to come for the draft, I know it's in 2 years, but I highly recommend going to that. It was incredible. And also, I just found out I'm getting shipped to me the autobiography of Emlyn Tunnell, which is a rarity I found on eBay. And I just found out the lady shipped it to me. She was having surgery this weekend. I'm like, oh dear, how are you? I like bid with her. I bid on it. We like went back and forth. And it was there for like $170. I got it for a lot less than that. But I'm really excited to read it. Footsteps of a Giant is what the biography is called. Autobiography is called. And for those of you that don't know, Emlyn Tunnell, I just love discovering Packer players that you really don't know a lot about. And it's that exhibit at the Neville Museum that turned me on to Emlyn Tunnell. That was back in 2018. And I'm still writing that journey. And there's going to be a new book about Emlyn Tunnell coming out in March of next year, which I'm really excited about as well. But if you haven't, check out this. The New York Giants actually have this video on Emlyn Tunnell that they did. It's a 22-minute video. It's incredible. It's on their website. You can find it by searching Google. I highly, 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 highly recommend watching it. It's an incredible human being that did a lot for the Green Bay Packers, kind of unsung some of the things that he did for the Green Bay Packers.
Awesome. Absolutely love it. Before we get to the YouTube comments, all the super chats, which thank you guys so much. I did want to give a shout out to everyone who showed up Sunday night at Kettle of Fish. Definitely kind of blended the Packers event with the Cheesehead TV meetup, but it was a ton of fun. And Packers everywhere caught the moment I got to say hi to Mark Murphy. Let's take a look here. As he's coming in the door there on the left, there's one Aaron Nagler shaking his hand. How you doing, Mark?
Why don't you shake his bodyguard's hand? Why don't you shake his bodyguard's hand?
I don't know his bodyguard.
Also,
I know Mark.
Why does he have a bodyguard? Nobody cares, Mark. No one cares. Literally. No one's going to hurt you, buddy. No one's going to hurt you.
Somebody must.
No.
It was great.
Like, why?
Mark,
like, seriously, why does Mark Murphy have a bodyguard? What a waste of money.
Because he's in New York, Corey. It's very dangerous out here, man.
What a waste of $1,265. I'm going to form a formal protest. Formal protest.
Anyway, it was great to see everybody. Thanks for everyone who said hello. It was amazing. And Patrick announced that they have signed a new lease to stay on Christopher Street long term, which is fucking amazing considering what dire straits they were in basically throughout and just coming out of the pandemic. So happy that they're going to be there long term. That is the best place in New York if you're a Packers fan. All right, let's get to some super chats.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Boom, boom. Brian Willie, why does Barry game plan so differently for teams that Green Bay should beat and teams that on paper are better than Green Bay?
I don't think he game plans much different at all. I think it's the exact opposite. I think the problem is that he doesn't game plan differently. I would love it if he were to game plan a little differently for those young, inexperienced quarterbacks, but he's going to run his stuff. That's the type of coach he is, and those, you know, coaches are either like really malleable and like try to get, you know, specific advantages against certain opponents and like are very, you know, chameleon like and change their stuff every week. Not Barry. He's going to run his, I'm going to run my stuff. Mike McCarthy was the same way. You know, I'm going to run my stuff. My stuff's going to be better than your stuff. Well, your stuff is not better than most people's stuff.
Your stuff sucks. Also, you know what? Why does Mark Murphy, shouldn't Jason Wallers could do a 2-for-1. Jason Wallers could be the bodyguard and the press man.
Funny enough, I had a drink with Jason Wallers shortly after that video was shot.
I'm still fascinated. Right, like, I'm like, who is this guy? I've never seen Mark Murphy have a bodyguard ever, but all of a sudden he didn't have one in London.
Nope.
So
maybe there's been a threat. Maybe there's been a threat on his life, Corey. We don't know.
No, he's milquetoast.
We don't know. We don't know.
No, come
he's
on.
Going through that. He's going through that whole lawsuit with Northwestern.
He's retiring in a year.
Anything's possible. Anything's
he bought
possible.
A golf course in Door County.
This is my point.
Have a bodyguard in Door County.
This is what I tell my kids all the time. You see the picture, you don't know the story. That's all.
I know. I want to know the story because, like, I remember seeing that video and being like, "Why isn't Aaron shaking that guy's hand?" And then I was like, "Oh, it's because he doesn't know who that is." And then I was like, "Wait, is that Mark Murphy's bodyguard?"
No,
and then from there, I went down this rabbit hole, and now I just need acquiring minds want to know. I'm gonna have to ask. I'm gonna send an email to Packers Everywhere. That's what I'm gonna do.
No, you should.
Send a letter to Packers Everywhere.
Murphy takes 5. Maybe he'll answer.
Murphy takes 5. Mark, after buying a golf course and retiring in a year and a half, do you now feel the need to have a bodyguard? Also, did the Packers pay for that bodyguard? And if so, how much was he? And also, what's his name? And why doesn't he shake people's hands when he comes in? And why doesn't he wear Packers gear, Mark? Inquiring minds want to know. Shouldn't he be like a fan? So he should have like a jersey and like a hat.
He should wear your hat.
Yeah. He should wear my hat and he should be like, yeah. So then you just think he's a fan coming in because wouldn't you want to have subterfuge? So like if somebody makes a move, you're like, oh no, you thought I was a fan, but now I'm going to take you out. I'm just fascinated. Like of
amazing.
All the people in the world.
Amazing.
Of all the people that work for the Packers, the person who needs a bodyguard the least of all the people is Mark Murphy. Ed Policy needs a bodyguard over Mark Murphy. I mean, just weird. Elaine Martin, right. Thanks for the super chat. I think that's a euro. Why isn't Bob Harlan in the Fall Hall of Fame yet? That's a good question.
He absolutely should be. That's a great question. Hopefully, at some point, he'll get in as a contributor. Down the line. I mean, that's the next great stump, right? Like we got Reggie. We got Leroy in, we got Jerry Kramer in. Need to get Bob Harlan in 100%. But the contributor stuff is pretty new, so I'm not surprised it hasn't happened yet, but he absolutely should be.
Yeah, I think it's hard. Yeah, I agree with you on the contributor thing. I think it's hard. Yeah, I don't know. I want to say it's owner bias, but you know I don't have any data to support that.
Probably true though.
Wendy Vance, you both predicted that the Packers could win against the Chargers, Lions, and Chiefs, and both said they may lay an egg against the Giants. Please keep predicting positively the rest of the season. Thanks for the super chat, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy. That's very nice of you. I think it's much more about, like, A, how the team plays, and B, the health of the team. Like, I think if Watson and Aaron Jones play in that game Monday night, they probably win. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
there's things you can look at here. That's not us.
I would never take anything I predict because normally I predict the Packers are going to win, and the only reason I was really worried about that was because London left such a bad taste in my mouth and the Giants in general, which I said last week of like,
oh yeah,
I distinctly remember in 2007 getting on the plane and just having this hubris of like, and I was in New York flying to Green Bay, and I just remember being like, oh, you Giants fans, you're going to lose. And ever since that moment and being so fucking cold and then watching Brett Favre have like four people out of five he could have thrown it to except for the guy he threw it to at the end and Jarrett Bush. Darvish not falling in the fucking ball, and all the other things that happened in that fucking game, and then Giants game after Giants game after Giants game, and then that London game, it was just like, ugh. John Simatovich, thanks for Super Chat. Reggie's 30 for 30 tonight. What should we expect? Minister of Defense.
We talked about that, John. Probably a little bit of everything.
Well, you know.
Hopefully
I guarantee you,
at his entire legacy.
I guarantee you they're going to play the play that I want to see Lucas Van Ness one day do, which is where he throws guys into other guys. Like, just one time. The only person, the last person to do that on the Packers was Jair Alexander against the Vikings.
Jair against Minnesota. That was fucking great. Yeah, but Reggie White throwing Chris Carter into Cunningham, or was it Culpepper? I don't know who the quarterback was, but throwing Chris Carter as a projectile, that is still one of my all-time favorite moments ever in Packers history. I mean, you can't get more cathartic. Like, fuck you, Vikings!
And the back-to-back sacks in the Super Bowl of just like
in the Super Bowl. Especially, I'll never forget this, and I know you probably remember it. We had just talked about at Big Blue at the house. We were watching that Super Bowl. I don't remember who said it, who exactly said it, but somebody said, yo, Reggie's been pretty quiet this game. And then literally, boom, two sacks back to back. It was awesome. Just awesome.
Porkmaster, maybe my dream of the Packers never losing again for the rest of our lives is a little lofty. Fine. Thanks to Super Chat. I think
Port
it was.
Master, you know,
I think it was. Right. I was going to say, I'm not going to shave my beard until the Packers make the playoffs, but that's dangerous. That's very, very dangerous. So I'm not going to say that out loud.
Yeah, because if they don't this year, then you've got to go ZZ Top.
I'll be Rip Van Winkle, bro. I'll be Rip Van Winkle.
I shaved because I have to change up the mojo now because they lost. You know, they had the 3-game win streak. It's feeling good. Mm-hmm. I was like, this could be a playoff beard, but then they lost, and I'm like, okay, no. Okay, got to change up the mojo. So
yeah, no, the reason I grow a beard is now is because in the winter, it's because I live in Wisconsin, especially Green Bay, and like yesterday it was like 20 degrees, felt like 12, so, you know, beard, it helps out, helps you a little.
A little help.
There's a reason us humans grew hair. We're always like, why do we still have this animal hair? And it's like,
It's cold. It's cold.
It's cold. It's nice. Nice to have a little fur on your face. On Culture Barbarian, thanks, Super Chat. This week on Banky on the Beat, he goes on a rant for those who are whispering about Jim Leonard again. Who is whispering about Jim Leonard again? Someone tell me.
He's just getting you going.
No one is whispering about Jim Leonard.
Bad defensive performance means Jim Leonard's going to get brought up.
Although, you know what? You know what would be great? Like, if we got Bill Belichick,
what would be
as a
great,
DC?
Corey? Oh God, can you fucking imagine? Shut up,
dude. We would have the best defense of all time. We would literally go from like the worst defense, soft ass bullshit, to like, holy crap, what just happened?
I mean, his defense did limit Tommy DeVito and the Giants to 10 points 2 weeks ago. I mean. Good Lord.
I mean, how incredible. I mean, I he's not going to, right? I don't think he's going to do anything.
No, he's
going to
retire.
Coach.
And if he's going to keep coaching, he's going to be a head coach. But
I agree.
Dare to dream. Again.
But if you were but here's the thing though. With this guy, okay? He is a historian. He loves
Student
the game
of game.
Football.
Loves yep. the game. Yep.
And so
what
if
more
you're...
historic franchise could you want to be a part of? Part of their history, part of the history of the league.
It's very Lombardi-esque.
So yeah, I'm just saying. Let's do it.
Like, if you're going to go out on your sunset, you're already like one of the greatest coaches to ever play, right? You're just chilling. You're like, oh yeah, you know what? I'm going to do what Vince Lombardi did. I'm going to go to Green Bay.
I'm going to plant that with Greg Bedard. I'm going to start that rumor. We're going to go. If Belichick were to be fired, Matt LaFleur would consider bringing him on as a defensive coordinator. Let's go.
I mean, we should make an offer. Like, can you imagine Mark Murphy's last thing he does is he gets us Bill Belichick?
Let's go. I mean, they were just here this summer. They were just here for doing practices this past summer.
Here's what's crazy. I could see Matt LaFleur trying to veto it because, like, he knows that as soon as the Packers don't do well, everybody's going to be like, well, we got our head coach. I mean, we got a head coach in the stable, so what are we waiting for? I mean, can you imagine, like, if you had, like, one of the winning – he's not the winningest coach, is he, in NFL history? He's up
no,
there.
No, it's still – I think that's still Don Shula, but, yeah, he's
up But he's up there. But, like, this guy, I mean, one of the greatest coaches of all time.
No doubt.
Can you imagine?
The greatest modern coach.
Coordinator. Oh, my God. Yeah, he wasn't better
than
Marty.
Who do we rate? Who do you rate? What do you rate as more possible, Corey? In the land of Corey just like shooting for the moon and saying shit into a microphone that'll never happen, what is more actually realistically possible? Bill Belichick comes and is defensive coordinator for Matt LaFleur, or Coach Prime comes to Green Bay as a head coach? Which one of these fantasy situations that Corey Behnke has spoken out into existence is actually close to or closer to happening?
I can see a window and a reasoning and a thinking for Belichick to become DC of the Packers. I can't just because, like,
okay.
I could see it. I can visualize it. Dion, I just feel like Dion's never going to be an NFL head coach. And if he ever is, he's going to take like the Dallas job, or he'll take.
Yeah,
like,
he wants a big one. Yeah, yeah.
He's a marquee guy. You know, he's not going to do Green Bay. I'm not feeling that.
Word.
Ian, thanks for Super Chat. Hey, brothers, my Carry the G case made it safely to Maryland. Fortunately, I could enjoy that Monday night. Can't wait to purchase here. Much cheaper transaction, LOL. Thanks for all you do, Cheesehead TV. Go, Pack, go. Yeah. Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
Ian literally, I was like, Ian, yeah, you could ship a case to yourself. And he's like, okay. He literally was on his way to take the case to the FedEx store. And I was like, Ian, you might want to package that before you get to the store. I don't think they're going to be like, oh yeah, what's in there? Beer, sir, you're going to have to drink that before we pack it. Sorry.
That's great.
I mean, is Al Harris coaching right now? He is, right?
Yeah. He's a defensive backs coach for the Cowboys.
Ooh, Al Harris as a DC for us.
I was going to wait because I think there's a super chat to it. Asking this question.
Oh, my fault. My bad. On Culture Barbarian, on a special Brandy and the Barbarian, they discuss whether Barry will succeed at his new job next season as a restroom attendant at Stuckey's.
No. Look, I think Barry could make somebody a good linebackers coach, but yeah, he has no business being a DC.
Another one from On Culture. Thanks, Super Chat. Have you seen Mike Valenti's rant about how Tommy DeVito is ruining his life? He can give Corey a run for his money on ranting.
I have not. Now I will definitely be seeking it out. I'm excited.
You know, I was watching this clip. I love, you know, Stephen A. Smith, speaking of ranting, the clip where he starts yelling and Kevin Hart is in the thing and he's like, why are you yelling? Can you stop? It's so funny. Just made me think of that. I'm just like.
Perfect. I identify with Kevin Hart in that situation at some points. Yes, I understand.
Nobody's yelling at you ever. What are you talking about?
Okay, coach. All right. Right.
I don't have a co-host who's literally known for his rants.
I
guarantee you that there have been more moments in this season on this show and watch party where the yelling is not coming from one Corey B.
Right. Watch parties like are off the table. Like I'm like watching football.
Oh,
yes,
oh,
I get excited and
got
I yell.
It. Got it.
But
got
like going it, on rants it. During a show, like I'm, yeah, I'm identifying with Kevin Hart in that situation. That's all.
Got it. Sean Nelson, the game versus Minnesota at home last season was the best defense I've seen the Joe Barry, Matt LaFleur defense play. Wish they'd use that game plan versus bad offenses, young QBs.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, one of the big reasons they were so dominant in that game is because the Vikings were down to like beer vendors on the offensive line. You know, like it's a lot easier to play defense when you are getting pressure almost instantly after the snap of the ball. Don't forget, they're down to their third center in that game. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they were a little bit more up in their grill at the line of scrimmage, but you know, for the most part, they didn't play much differently. Jair traveled a little bit more. Jair was on the field. That helps. But, you know, a big part of it was because they own the line of scrimmage. And when they've been able to do that this year, whether it's Kansas City, Detroit, what have you, they've been successful. But, yeah, again, that's why I come back to it really feels like they took the Giants for granted because they didn't own shit up front at all.
Joe Mailman, is Al Harris DC material? Hard to imagine he'd have guys playing so far off when the situation calls for tight coverage. There it is. Thank you for the super chat.
There it is. I it's funny because I know Will Blackman has really led the charge here for Al's candidacy, so to speak, not just in Green Bay, but just to get a coordinator gig. I have no idea. Like, I love that idea narratively. Al Harris comes home, right? Like, I'm all about that life. But as far as like his bona fides or what his philosophy would be, what hell, what scheme he would run, I have no idea. But yeah, I love the image. I love the kind of social bookmark, if you will, of Al Harris coming to Green Bay to be the defensive coordinator. I'd love that. But yeah, as far as like what kind of style of defense he'd play, yes, Joe, I got to think he would probably lean into his playing days and want guys who could play press man and could be disruptive at the line of scrimmage over, hey, let's play 40 yards off.
I mean, here's the reality, right? Like, we all jest, we're joking, ha ha ha, this is so funny. The reality is Joe Barry's here for another year, barring the only way I see Joe Barry getting fired is if, so what do we have, five games left? Six? No,
four
what,
games.
Four? Five?
Four games.
Four games left. If we lose three out of four, and it's, you know, if we lose three out of four and miss the playoffs, I still think he survives. I think if we lose four, there's maybe a chance, and it's only if, you know, I mean, the fact that we didn't get any sacks last night and the fact that we couldn't stop them when we needed to is against a team that is not that big, not that good, and was 4-8 coming in should be damning, but it's not. It's not going to be. It's not going to be. We're going to get Joe Barry one more year, just like we got Aaron Rodgers one more year, and that's just the way it is in Green Bay.
I think I disagree, but I hear what you're saying.
Please disagree, please.
Right? No. That's the thing.
I would love being wrong.
Right. But I think there's a decent chance they move on. Like, just a gut feeling. Nothing, like, obviously, look, if the defense suddenly becomes the turnover machine they were at the end of last year, right, and they're winning games, probably he sticks around. Maybe he shouldn't, but he probably does. But I do think there's a path to Joe Barry's exit. Let's just put it that way.
I'm not defending Joe Barry, so. Whoever said I was
doing that. No, I know you're not.
I've never once. No, I know. Somebody said that in the chat. I've never once. I'm just saying what I think the Packers will do. But what do I know? Nothing.
People have a real problem with that, don't they? Like separating out. And like you stated it perfectly. You know, it's like you weren't saying like Joe Barry's great. Like he should stick around. You're saying what you think the Packers will probably do. But this is the same thing with the Aaron Rodgers stuff. It was like, well, they're probably going to do this. And people are like, you're defending. It's like, no, I'm not defending anything. This is just what we think the Packers will do. Having watched the Packers for 50 fucking years, you know, like that's all.
Yeah. And I don't hate Joe Barry as much as a lot of people do. You know, I'm as frustrated. I like the Mina Kimes thing was like great. Cause it's like, yeah, that's how I feel. Not knowing nothing.
Cause if you know, it's so the Mina Kimes thing is so good because you don't feel like you're being gaslit as a Packers fan. You know, you're getting confirmation from the outside from someone who's pretty astute saying, holy shit, this is so frustrating. Like, yes, exactly.
At the same time, some of the things that we've said over time is the way that we have scouted and developed and the way that our strategy is on players. Like, I think there's so many other things that have nothing to do with Joe Barry that play into him. And I also think, personally, agreed. I do think, you know, being in the top 10 of scoring on a defense is good. And I do think if you look at almost every game, the defense isn't why we lost. And so those two things for me are really hard to square.
You
know, it's very rare where you can go five things. The defense was maybe like one or two things, but the offense is the higher ratio in almost every game this season. Right. So
I feel that
we as Packer fans, I feel like we give our offense more
leeway,
more patient more with the offense, more leeway. More yeah. There you go. Yeah. More grace than we do our defense.
The offense gets more grace. Yeah. Well, we've been fucking horrible for like 30 years. Yeah, of course we're a little impatient on the defensive side of the ball. Lord. It's like a miracle when our defense plays well. That's why, we're a little frustrated.
I mean, 1996, we were pretty good. 1997, we were pretty good. 2014, we were pretty good. 2010, we were pretty good.
Yep.
And that's it.
Now pick literally any other fucking year, and we were horrible.
Yeah, it's true.
Goddamn sick of it.
Although there were like 95, I think, where we had really high turnover ratios where we started to kind of ascend and the offense. Right. Yeah, but yeah, you know, it's true. Janice L., do the guys on defense covering receivers decide how close to play to the line when in man, or is that a call from the bench? Great question.
Absolutely great question. You can never really get a straight answer. Matt was literally asked almost that exact question on Monday, and he said it's being addressed or will be addressed or something. We need to address it. I know back in the old school system, like with Dom and even I think with Patton, it was very much, okay, this is how it's taught, but it's at the discretion of the corner. Like, as far as...
Oh, so it's not like Madden where you push down?
Exactly. Yes, no. It is not like Madden. Correct. But so, yeah, it is
don't just push
usually...
the down button for press.
Usually, in most calls, not every call, like, there are calls where it's like, okay, you are mandated, you've got to get up and press on the line of scrimmage. Like, to... you playing two man and you want press, blah, blah, blah. That can be mandated. But for the most part, the majority of calls traditionally, now again, they won't ever give a straight answer, which is probably, you know, by design. But yeah, traditionally, the corner is the one who has, okay, I know down a distance what I feel comfortable with, what I think is the best way to approach this is what's, again, I keep saying this, but traditionally, that's how it's done. But I don't want to say, like, that's how the Packers do it because they won't give us a straight answer on this, ever. Hmm. Great question, though, Janice. And it's a frustrating
Ian,
one.
As Nag said last week, Lambeau was up all game and loud versus KC. It was amazing. Hope Lambeau has the same energy on Sunday. It definitely made a difference. Also, have you asked Matt LaFleur to come back on the show?
We have, and he indicated that he is open to and wants to do it. Just haven't found good timing yet, but hopefully before the year is out. And I'll just say this, I'll say it in the camera. Matt, you didn't come on last year. You missed the playoffs for the first time as a head coach. Now you're four games away from the end of the season. Your playoff hopes are precarious. You come on transplants, you're probably going to make the playoffs. And then you'll avoid Hard Knocks, which I know you don't want to do. So come on transplants.
I do think it'll be fun. I do think Hard Knocks would be fun. Though I've always said that
it'd be hilarious.
Just the love. I wish we would have done it when we had HBO. Like HBO was like more of a thing than it is now. Now it's like buried within the streaming platforms. But like just the love for Green Bay and the history and the way that NFL films will treat Hard Knocks for Green Bay. Like I know nobody wants to do it. I know it means we suck. I know all these things, but I've always said that it would just be it's an incredible gift to the city of Green Bay and the Packers for people to see this team for who it is and what they do. I do think, you know, it's a testament to 1265. I think there's a lot of things you would see that 1265 does that you don't really get to see ever, even if it's in reality television, right? Even if it's that. So
I hear you.
You know, I get that. I get the coaches hate it. I get everybody hates it. I've always like wanted us to do it 1 year just to be able to get a little taste of, you know, some of the stuff that goes on and you know, how human that 1265 is with their players.
Word. Very much agreed.
But yes, if Matt LaFleur had come on our show, he probably would still be undefeated in December. So there's that.
There's that. I mean, these are the things. These are the trade-offs you make, you know, as a head coach. It's what you do.
You know, if everybody just bombarded Jason Waller's ex account, maybe that would help.
Don't stop. Please don't.
Don't.
My God, don't. Please do
just
not.
Say, please, Jason Waller's, can Matt LaFleur come on transplants? Just be nice about
please,
it.
Please.
Just be nice.
Please don't.
Just be nice. He'll be fine with it. If everybody's just nice and they're just like, we really want to hear what Matt has to say, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just do it. It'll be okay.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Are there any more super chats?
No.
I'm uncomfortable, Corey. Can we move on?
I can tell.
Okay, good. Let's give a shout out to our Patreon members. Come on now, you Patreon folks. Happy hours tomorrow night. It's going to be nice to mix it up with all of you, especially after seeing so many of you when I was in town for the Chiefs game. Corey, myself, we cannot thank you guys enough. You are the lifeblood of everything we do at Cheesehead TV, as well as the Carry the G Club members here on YouTube. You guys are awesome. You keep growing this, the membership here on YouTube. It's kind of blowing me away. I really, really, really thank you so much for the support. We literally could not do what we're doing without you guys. So thank you so much. You got anything else, Corey, before we head off into the evening?
No, I'm excited for us to beat the Buccaneers. I feel like we can do it. So let's get back to 500. Back to 500. Yay.
There you go. Hey, Packers still control their destiny. That's what I like to
hear.
We're
in the hunt.
That'll do it for this.
We're in the hunt.
That'll do it for this episode of Packer Transplants. We'd like to thank everyone who makes Cheesehead TV part of their daily Packers routine. We are and will always be devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide.
I think it's a fluid situation, and we're I know you guys love it, especially Nagler. I can see you smirking at me right there. We're going to take it one day at a time, and just it's going to be fluid, though. That's all I can tell you.